All right, let's go. You're rolling with Jason and John, 92.9 FM ESPN. Welcome to your Thursday, June 12th edition of the Jason and John Show. I'm here. I'm Jason Smith. I'm that part of it. I realize I leave that out. You know why I do it? Because it's not about me. I'm here as servant. As servant of Memphis. Servant of God. And I'll tell you what, it's because I love the people I work with. I like holding them up. One of them is John Martin. Y'all know him well. A man who has accomplished something very few have. To be both big locally and national. Very few have done it. He has. It puts him up on a Mount Rushmore of Memphis media members. And with him, on the other side of the glass, Brad Carson. Another man I love holding up. Executive producer of On the Ones and Twos. Program director number what, John?
Number one in the 901.
Number one in the 901. Number one in the country.
Now, you do know that Brad's got hoes in different area codes, too, now, don't you? Come on, Brad. Come to the front, man. He does radio in Madison, Wisconsin.
Now, you kind of like Glorilla because you put in a little bit of... I was just talking about God, and now you're talking about...
It's a balance.
Hoes.
It's in different area codes.
You see what I'm talking about?
Brad's got him. He doesn't like talking about him, but he's got him. He's big in Madison, Wisconsin, bro.
So the fact that you couldn't separate those things,
that's
at least
right.
Put a little time in between those
I think
two.
We had enough of a buffer, you know?
Did we?
We all fall short.
Had I even finished my monologue? I see you're very excited today.
I am. I'm pumped.
I can tell.
It's Thursday, June 12th.
How are you pumped?
Because we have a prolonged NBA final series. That makes me happy.
Also, Jason Smith, number one preps writer for this city. Number one Tigers beat writer for this city, and the number one host with the most co-host.
What you try to do there. All of that's washed and gone.
If we're going to go around the horn, John, we have to go around the horn. I want to give people flowers if we're flowering.
It's very aggressive complimenting. That's
I don't know what ranking system you were using.
I got the notes. We got receipts.
It's become part of the show. We very aggressively compliment each other. I don't know exactly when it started, but it has.
Jason started it.
Yeah.
Jason is a flowery kind of fella.
He's uplifting. He's uplifting.
My guy, you're gonna get an intro when you get Jason Smith, and it's going to be a good minute long, but you're going to get the resume.
I would love to know.
I don't like that you guys are putting the heat lamp on my monologue here.
It's just the
And my
intro.
Lifting up of you all.
I would honestly.
I want to lift you up
again,
if you're going to lift us up.
I do it in
reciprocal,
service.
Reciprocal.
I do it in service.
We do it in service too.
But see, that's the deal. Not looking for reciprocation.
I know
like,
you're not.
Like the rest of society is.
I don't ever give it to you. Right? I only highlight, you know, usually your imperial security days.
Because
I know you're not looking for it.
Jesus washed feet, didn't he?
I believe that was the parable.
Now. I'm not going to wash John's feet.
No. You would not do that.
Brad's laughing. Because we know his toes are yellow.
I would pay for somebody to give me
because
like a real foot massage.
We know his toes are yellow. We've seen it. How are you dealing? How is that looking?
Oh, I mean, I think
you got that dealt with, didn't you?
Yeah, I think.
Once you made that money.
Yeah, I think he would say it's improved. But
we've dealt with that.
Yeah, I get the pedicures. I get the pedicures.
This guy, he got the money. He fixed his toes and he moved into the cove.
Oh, yeah. Brad, have you never had a pedicure?
No, hell nah. No. Hell
Brad,
to the no.
I can barely. Okay, now we can hear you.
You've got to get
hell
a pedicure.
No.
Once you move into the cove, you're getting regular pedicures.
Oh, no, no, we're not on this side. Y'all over there can get your petties.
Look, it's a rite of passage.
I know who's getting petties. SGA.
Damn right he is.
Seems like the type.
I think he gets it's self care, bro.
Doesn't he?
It's self care.
Does he seem like the type or not?
It's yes,
he does.
But it's,
yeah,
it's
really
fact.
Does.
Because he's
yeah.
a so he seems like a guy that would take care of himself.
Okay.
Now I would
well,
ask
that's
this.
Just me trying
well
to
done
it
there.
Back.
Thank you.
I would ask this. How would you introduce
John won't let me.
Benedict Mathurin? That's what I would like to know. If he were here, if he was sitting right next to you, how would you introduce Benedict Mathurin?
I would say hello, instant offense.
Number one in the 901.
I would say hello, instant offense. He's the best instant offense man in the league, number one.
He really is. It's unbelievable. It's like Lou Williams, you know.
Now, you schooled me on how poor he is defensively and why sometimes he's not even in the rotation.
Right.
You know, can't be.
Right.
And I'm not sure where you got that ranking from. I want to go back and revisit.
I honestly don't know myself.
That man, I've watched him put in effort on the defensive end since. I think you said he was 13th on the team in defense. Back to the point. He is unbelievable in terms of what he can do offensively. can absolutely take over a game, and he did it last night.
Yeah.
But what's so crazy about him is that parts of these playoffs, he wasn't even a factor. He wasn't even being played.
No doubt.
But he's capable of games like last night. What was it, 27?
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Yep. I mean, that's another example of the Pacers front office and the job that they've done.
The Van Pelt interview with him, uncomfortable.
Oh, I didn't
it's because
see that.
He's not typically in those spots. Van Pelt was trying.
Is he not a good interview?
He's just like Van Pelt tried to, do what I do.
He's a wet
hold
noodle.
Hold the guy up, tell him, I just love you because you're so serious all the time to try to bring out some birds. And, there's just not, sometimes with some of those guys, there's just not a ton to get.
Yeah.
But that's because all he's got for you is buckets.
That's right. I mean, some of these
he
guys.
He ain't got many words. He's got buckets.
Trained assassins on the basketball court.
That's what he is.
And that's what they are.
Well, last night was huge. Again, somebody else other than Halliburton.
Now, Halliburton did his job.
Don't get me wrong.
He did his job.
He went over two on our thing, didn't he?
He did.
I got that right, but I said it would be inefficiently. It wasn't inefficient. It was good.
What the hell?
He turned up the pace.
As somebody that was holding a Thunder -5 ticket, I was watching them unfold and fold again, and I was like, What the hell, Burton? And it wasn't even Halliburton. It was like Miles Turner and Mathurin and Nimhart.
Game one win.
I'm like, damn, what the hell? Now I got to martingale this and put $5,000 on OKC -6 in game four. What the hell? There's some numbers that might surprise you about this series. We'll get into those today on the show. Drew Hill is here. We're gonna catch up with him. He has taken up residence at 92.9 today. He obviously filled in for Jeff Calkins. He's going to be here in studio, and we'll chat with him at 11:25 about the Grizzlies offseason, Summer League, Zach Edey. Lots to get to with him at 11:25. Then at 1:25, Jason Fitz is going to join us. We'll talk NFL, NBA playoffs with him, the finals, and more. There was an interview with Aaron Bradshaw. Jason and I were both very impressed and excited about what's to come for the University of Memphis men's basketball program, so we'll talk about that. I will say, on Aaron Bradshaw, I mean, you can probably count on one hand the number of times a top five dude from high school has played here. So if whatever the Tigers are next year, it feels like a lot of it's going to rest on him. So I'm hoping that this is the place where, he can – I know we've said that before, but just as I saw the interview with Earl Hardin yesterday, it reminds me the significance. Oh, baby! It reminds me of the significance of AB. If Penny can really turn that guy into something.
Shout out to Earl Hardin. He's getting some great interviews right now.
Earl on the street, man.
Man's working every day. I saw he had A-Lo the other day. He had Adonis Thomas back in town from overseas.
Did Adonis look ready for our one-on-one with Beasley?
He actually did.
Okay.
I think they were talking about his 13th season he just completed
overseas.
That's
crazy. Crazy.
And so he's in the kind of shape we need.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, love absolutely. That. Where is he? Did he say where he was at?
He did. I can't remember.
Okay.
Because
you were on to the Aaron Bradshaw interview.
I was on to the Bradshaw. I really wanted to see what we were going to learn there.
And we'll get into what we learned.
Yes.
So he's in the Qatari Basketball League.
There you go.
So
it's tough to keep up, these guys. Sometimes they shift around different places every year or every couple of years. Adonis has had a fine career, much like an Andre Turner that ends up spending over a decade overseas and making plenty. Lester Hudson does the same thing, made plenty of good money. You come back home, you take care of family.
Yes,
it's a good life. DJ Stephens has done that.
No doubt.
I don't think he's maybe 10 yet for him, but
yeah.
Maybe it is.
That's got to be getting
up there. Adonis is 12, 13.
Yeah, because
maybe it
DJ's last year was what? Was he wasn't part of that Four Kings team, right?
Man, it gets
I think it was 12
somewhere in there.
I think 12-13 was his last year.
That makes sense.
Yeah, cuz he came in as a freshman in Josh's first year, remember? So it would have been 12-13.
Yeah.
That would have been his I think, or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe it was 13-14. We'll have to think about it. But anyway, we're getting up there. All these guys are in, 13-year careers and we're getting old, man. So, anyway, we'll get into all that today here on the show. But Well.
And put some respect on it, huh?
Put some respect on the yes, sir.
You should. That's what the people want to hear from you.
Well.
You correct us on how to say the name, and yet you don't believe yet.
Honestly, most of it has been about my belief in the Thunder.
I know.
As opposed to the disbelief of the Pacers.
In fact, I felt a little bit, and maybe you correct me if I'm wrong, almost a sort of annoyance with folks that after game one, and I'm holding myself in there, after game one, just wanted to come in and say or had a different feeling about, okay, well,
you got to at least believe the Pacers can win now, right? Mm. Sure, OKC is still the huge favorite. Sure, your boy still believes OKC is going to win. But after what we watched, the way they did it, you have to say, you know, where you're not even asking Halliburton to be great for an entire game because they've got this depth and everything else that take care of the ball. They did that in the second half of that game. We said, well, you can see a formula now, a way they could win, and I sensed a little bit still of, no, not after the one.
Right.
But now it's two.
Yep.
Where are you now?
Well, obviously it's real. I mean, this is a real... This is a real strike. This is a real effort.
It's clear. I mean, they're up 2-1.
Because now I can't say it was a fluky.
Correct. It's two of them.
Folding in the fourth quarter, and, right? Which I was doing after game.
And it's every fourth quarter. It's every fourth quarter in this series.
Game two was kind of a blowout, whatever. Yeah. But I mean, in the relevant competitive games, this is now 2/4 where it was a 14-point turnaround. I think or maybe it was even more in this fourth quarter because they were up 5 going into the fourth, right? In this one. And then obviously we know we got to 15 in game one before, the collapse. So, yeah, I don't, you know, and I think it's interesting, like you pointed out before the show, that SGA's bent over. And you're like, because I remember coming into this series, people were talking about the Pacers' conditioning. Like, people were tweeting about that. Like, I think maybe even Drew Hill was tweeting about the Grizzlies and, like, how they need to be, like, one of the most conditioned teams in the NBA. Like, this is the path. You can be in the best shape of anybody in the NBA, and you can have success like that because teams will get tired.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, like, okay, this is now, like you said, two straight in the context of competitive games, fourth quarter collapses. Is this happening because of fatigue?
As you said, SGA was bent over in the fourth quarter. The Pacers have outscored the Thunder by 27 points in the fourth quarter over the three games, and OKC has shot 21% from three in the fourth. That's tired legs.
Yep.
And we thought, well, that's their pace. That's the way they play. But it's not what it's what they have done to beat people, but they haven't had to necessarily do it in terms of all playoffs long, haven't had to run at this pace. The Pacers are doing to OKC something we thought they wouldn't be able to, which was what they did to the Knicks, was you play our pace. We're going to see if you can hold up. And you've seen it in the fourth quarter of these games. Surprisingly, OKC, which plays that fast pace, is not able to keep up. And maybe it's part of this is that with Indiana, man, again, it's not just one dude. Like, they work you. You have to be locked in defensively because they got so many guys that can hit. Freaking Obi Toppin is a problem.
Yes, he is.
That's what I'm saying. You have to mind him. You have to mind all these guys. Neesmith's hidden shots. You know what I'm saying? Nembhard's hidden shots. All of a sudden, you know, guys. Mathurin last night goes nuts.
Yep.
And that wears you down. Oh, by the way, then you got to go hit shots in the fourth quarter. This team has not been clutch.
Yep.
It hadn't had to do a lot of the close ones, number one. But it has not been clutch, whether it was regular season or in these playoffs. And you're adding that they're tired to it.
Yep.
Again, look at SGA at the end of that game after he missed some of those key shots he needed to hit last night in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
Plus, look at the 3-point shooting for them the whole fourth quarter, every fourth quarter in this series. Now, again, John said, you know, one of those games pretty much done, second game.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's held up throughout the series. They have really been worn down.
Yep.
Early on.
Yep.
But certainly up to this point now through three games, by the Pacers, by how fast the Pacers play, they take care of the ball other than that first half of game one. And you just have to be so locked in defensively because there are so many of them that can hurt you.
Yeah, I mean, I think.
So you don't get to lay off. Nobody gets a rest.
Exactly,
you know what I'm saying? On the defensive end.
Exactly. No, they switch everything.
Man.
They swarm. OKC does. So when you. Look, Indiana did something that was really smart, and it's obvious, but they have picked up SGA full court and with Nembhard and Neesmith, and they have made him work so damn hard. And so I think the obvious adjustment for Dagnall is going to be, okay, can we find another ball handler? Can it be Cason Wallace? Can it be Isaiah Joe? Like, we can't just have SGA bringing the ball up the floor every trip because he's wearing down. And when he underperforms, you see what happens to that team. Like, and by the way, like, he had a good game last night. I mean, it wasn't by any means a disaster, but he finished with like 24, 27 or something like that. But when he doesn't have 30 plus, you see what happens. Like, the Thunder can't win in a series like this. So that's going to be the adjustment for OKC is you got to find a way to survive until the fourth quarter, right? Like, that's got to be the adjustment. So I don't know if they can.
I mean, that's the part that gives me pause is, okay, this exhaustion. Because there was a play there in the fourth quarter where SJ tries to go up, you know, looks tired, looks laboring, doesn't get the score, and then he's bent over. So you worry about that. And now you have a quick turnaround. It's Wednesday, Friday. You don't even get that extra day. So, I mean, these are all prime athletes, but that would be my big concern right now for the Thunder is this tiredness and exhaustion a real thing.
Why is OKC still then -240 to win it? If now we're looking at them, we're saying, man, they're tired. We don't know if they can adjust and everything else. Why does Vegas still so firmly believe, even down 2-1,
mm-hmm.
with the stats you shared with us yesterday, what is it, 81%, yep. whatever it is?
Yep.
Game three winners go on. Why is OKC still favored then?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's an important question. It's one we probably should have expanded on yesterday. But I learned today that in the new format, it used to be 2-3-2, right? Home game, the top seed gets the two games, and the road team gets three games, and then it goes back for the next two. But in the new format, which is 2-2-1-1-1, the lower seeded team, that would be the Indiana Pacers in this scenario. The lower seeded team that's up 2-1 since this new format was instituted has never won the finals. That's only happened twice. It's only happened twice since this new format, but it was the 2015 Cavs. They were up 2-1. And then the 2022 Boston Celtics were up 2-1 on the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
They went on to lose that series as well. So it's a small sample, but maybe that 80.5% is a little less instructive than we believe it to be, since it applies to different formats. Of course, it would make sense when the format is 2-3-2 that the lower seeded team up 2-1 with
two more home games consecutively
would win 81% of the time. You know, that would stand to make a lot more sense than, okay, this thing's going back to OKC probably twice, right? I mean, don't you think it's a 7-game series at this point? It could be 6, but I don't feel like they're going to rattle off 3 in a row. Feels like a 7-game series, and OKC wins it in 7. That's where I'm at with it right now, as of today. But Indiana has made their presence felt in a way that I did not expect.
A way that I don't think many of us expected, but Freddie Coleman looking at y'all laughing right
That's
now.
Right. Freddie Coleman just got a promotion, by the way.
Pacers in 6. Man had Pacers in 6. Y'all were laughing at him.
We were. I got a text last night from somebody with a picture of Freddie Coleman on the microphone. Saying
yeah.
Pacers in 6. It's crazy. I was like, who is harassing me about this right now?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Freddie was one of the few. The few, the bold, the brave.
Remember, Nuggets had him on the ropes.
They did. They sure did.
Went up 2-1,
yep.
up in fourth quarter.
That's right.
Of game 4.
And smoked it.
At home, smoked it.
Yep.
But pretty sure they were up 8.
It was 8 in the fourth quarter. Yep. And then the barrage started. And they do have the best play in the world.
And that's going to be... If Indiana's in that same spot,
yes,
you'd think, okay, well, the champ with the best player in the world, that's where team's going to finish them off, and didn't.
That's right.
If Indiana's going to be in a similar spot. Now, maybe they're not up 8,
right.
But if they're right there, fourth at home,
yes.
you got a chance right there to put them down.
Game 4 is going to be very difficult.
This is the one. This is the one.
And
that chance is going to be there. Same chance Denver had to put them down.
And Denver
let them go. They let them off the hook.
Well, it's like, okay, you're going to have to simulate the desperation. That's going to be the hard part. Right, you're gonna have to match OKC's desperation.
They just got so many dudes.
They do.
Like we've said. Well, Haliburton's got to be more aggressive, and he was last mm-hmm. night. Nobody's expecting 27 from Mathurin though. That put this thing on another.
That's the outlier, you know, right?
That's what I'm saying. And they got dudes like that.
So if you're a Thunder fan, you would say Mathurin's not scoring 27 again.
Right, but it'll be somebody else.
It could be
just like
else.
It was
be
in Game 1,
it
where it was
Obi Hop, you know,
Neesmith. It was Neesmith and Nembhard that hit the 2 threes that set up Haliburton on the 12-2 run to finish the game.
Exactly,
it's the other dudes.
Yeah, I mean
the other guys right now are performing better than OKC's other guys, which was not supposed to happen.
It's just funny. Like if I'd have told you going into last night that combined Nembhard, Neesmith, and Turner are going to combine for 24 points. You would have said the Thunder blew them out. That's what you would have said. Like, everybody would have thought that.
It wasn't their night. It was Mathurin.
But you got 7. And you got. And by the way,
how many shots he took? You got it in front of you.
I don't have it in front of me. But it didn't feel like it was. He was 9 of 12, 2 of 3
efficient.
From 3. Yeah, very efficient. Very efficient. And also, T.J. McConnell changed that game.
Oh, dude, he had 5 steals too.
It all felt like the
same. I can't believe you haven't said his name in this whole time. As much as you love him.
Well, I mean, I.
As much as we love him.
Yeah,
the show
I mean, he's a grinder.
Him.
He's an absolute grinder.
Our man Schiffman represents him.
He had two inbound steals with the Thunder, just super careless. I mean, and they were huge. They were huge steals. It was like
five on the game.
Which
is crazy.
I'm just saying, two of them were just like
yes,
the careless. Like, we're not paying attention. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. We're giving it away.
Dude is huge. Etienne.
Yes.
Relentless.
Yes. And then again, dude, you get zero from Wiggins. Remember, he gave you 21 in game two.
Van Pelt was asking Mathurin about, he was just going down the list, but asking Mathurin about McConnell and all that. Mathurin's like, one day I hope to look back and say he played a good game. I'm like, huh? Talking about McConnell.
He might be a strange guy. That, you know, we're going to have to do some investigating.
Is it wet rag or is just there's not much there? You know, because when I heard that, I thought he's about to open it up like something profound.
Yeah.
We'll look back on his performance and talk about how he changed it defensively.
He said,
and I'll be able to say he played well. Maybe he gets nervous. See, I'm going to lay off.
Right.
Because some of these guys, man, it's not their thing.
No, I mean, I'll be honest.
And he's not the one that's often in the limelight. Sometimes in the regular season, but let's be real, it's typically the other guys. Mathurin's he's walking offense.
Like, who would you say?
The only thing he knows is buckets.
Interviews performance was better. Benedict Mathurin's, Aaron Bradshaw's.
Bradshaw brings the energy.
Okay, Bradshaw brought some energy.
Are you going to play that or something? The way you have talked that up, people are going to actually think there's a lot of substance.
I think we need to be introduced.
I don't think we have the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
I think it was just a preview.
You have an entire community that doesn't know their team yet, and then this is our best way to introduce. You know, oh baby, so that's my man Earl Hardin still doing it.
Yeah,
he commentated like one of the, it used to be Memphis Madness.
I think he does Penny's camps. Very instrumental in terms of he's in that circle.
I got to listen to this Benedict Mathurin interview. I got to see what that's all about.
No, just very Scott was doing his best. It's just hard.
Well, everybody can't be Calvin Austin, Scott. You know?
He's number two right now, by the way. Someone sent that to us.
Love that. Love to see that.
Their receivers coach.
Well, you know, Calvin Austin, I think it was against the Giants. Maybe he had a huge game against the Giants. Yeah. You know, he came on to the Scott Van Pelt set after the game, and, you know, he was very, like, humble and outwardly, you know, grateful. Because, like, I used to watch your, you know.
It's huge.
You know, everybody can't, everybody going to be that, though.
Won't be that great interview that's shiny.
That's right. And Scott always tries to find it, but you don't always get it.
Nobody knows that better than our next guest. You hope every interview is a home run. Sometimes it's not.
That's right.
But this guy works hard in all of them to make them home runs.
He's the best. He's Drew Hill. We'll talk to him when we come back. Jason and John, I'm just trying to film ESPN. Drew Hill covers the Grizzlies for the Daily Memphian. He was the host of the Jeff Calkins Show today, and he's nice enough to hang around and join us here in studio. All right, lots to get to.
Well, hold on. I wanted to get in on this introductory thing because normally – I'm a little disappointed because normally Jason introduces me.
Does he?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Jason says a lot of really nice things about me.
Right. Professional.
Right.
So today I decided to do what any good young person would do.
Yep.
And I asked ChatGPT to write me an introduction for Jason.
For Jason.
What I'm in excited. The world?
And that you, John.
You have flipped the script.
So here we go. Here we go. Are we ready?
Former it says, yes. Preps writer it says, read this.
Read this with a voice warm and full of admiration. You ready?
Yeah, I can't wait.
Good morning, Memphis, and to everyone tuning in across the Mid-South. Today, we've got a name you know and a heart you'll remember. He's a man of faith, a man of service, and a man who's walked the newsroom floor with purpose and integrity. Jason Smith, a devoted servant of God, a pillar in his community, and yes, a former Preps reporter at the Commercial Appeal.
Yes.
Who told the stories that made our high school athletes feel like champions.
Yep.
Whether he's lifting spirits with his words or lending a hand where it's needed most, Jason leads with humility and heart. From sidelines to sanctuaries, from scoreboards to service, he's always been about more than just the headlines. And of course, he somehow manages to do it all while carrying his co-host John Martin on his back every single day.
That is
Let's
beautifully
hear it
done.
For the real MVP, Jason Smith.
Let's
think,
hear it.
Dude, I think I'm going to cry like
Very
KD.
Good.
It even brought humor in. Wow.
Hey, I'll tell you what, this language learning model is fantastic.
I said, can you add a snarky line about his co-host John Martin?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Incredible.
That was great.
John is right. We will not need humans. That was so well done.
It's very disappointing. My job is going to disappear one day.
I don't think that would disappear, but I do think a lot of jobs will disappear. I do. I mean, like, customer service jobs already have, you know?
Oh, it's such a battle to get anybody on the phone about anything now.
Mm. Yeah, but those will go away for sure. Like, you will not ever talk. You will not ever deal with a human, talk to a human on that. Like, if you ever, whoever you call, like, whoever you need customer service with, it feels like.
Imagine being in a job where you have to hire somebody now. And, like, you know, young people are just using ChatGPT to write their resume.
No question. And there are some giveaways, right? Like, the M-Dash. Like, the M-Dash is a dead giveaway on Chick. Because, like, most people don't use those. I actually use those in my writing, and Calkins always gets on me about it. But, like, there, if you notice when you go to ChatGPT and ask for a prompt, there's so many M-Dashes. And it's just, like, a dead giveaway. Because nobody at large writes like
that.
Yeah,
I use it sometimes. Yeah. Not that often.
But, like, we're writers. Like, the average person is not using an M-Dash when they're writing a text or a prompt or whatever the case may be, right? Like, M-Dashes are just not part of the average American's, you know, arsenal, would be my guess.
I thought you were referring to yourself as creative right now, as a creative, not just a writer.
Yeah, no, I think creative is, content creator, definitely. I mean, this is content. Field of 68 is content. Daily Memphian is content. Right. It's just content.
I mean, this is part of the reason why at the Daily Memphian, I don't know if people noticed or cared, but like last season we kind of went away from doing game stories off of Grizzlies games like all season long because that's something AI can do.
Totally.
Everybody can read the box score. Right. Everybody can just watch the game on TV.
Like, totally.
It's more valuable for Chris to spend his time writing analysis.
100%.
Or me to write about whichever player had a good night and what happened
during
the day.
Like, that's right.
You know?
I mean, AI can sort of do that, but not as well, right? Not as well. They can sum up what happened in the course of a game with a box score.
Right.
You know, there was a time, this is like so crazy, there's a time where I would get emails and calls from out of town, like whether it was the Philadelphia Inquirer, whether it was the Advocate in Louisiana, when visiting teams would come up here, and they would those newspapers would reach out to me and ask me to cover it and write the game story, you know, that hasn't happened in a while, but like that's a relic now.
Well, now you also have the AP, like
right.
Like we would use the AP game stories.
But does AP even exist anymore?
It does. Clay.
I know, but I'm saying in this future, what is the AP's place? Because it's kind of like the same thing. It's like
a good question.
It's just a game story, right? That just gets distributed to all these different places.
I think honestly, and maybe some people would push back, but they don't want the people that are reading the Daily Memphian don't want the game stories because they just watched the game
on
TV. They just saw everything that happened. Like they want to know, like, what did Bane have going on earlier in the day? Like, was there a reason he played so well that night? Like, whatever it might be. Like, that's the type of stuff that we try to focus on now. But
it's
crazy.
More.
Like, I couldn't have written a better introduction myself.
No, you couldn't have. You couldn't have. But I will say.
I really appreciate
when
that.
When I seek out something, it's like, I want to know what this writer or person thinks about it. I don't care what they, you know, Benedict Mathurin scored 27. We all know that. What do you think this means for the series moving forward? That's what AI can do. Oh, well, based on the statistical probabilities, the Thunder will win game 4, and you know, whatever. I get that. I need to know, like, what you think, man. So that's what AI can't think, right? It uses data. It spits out whatever. I hope that's all it is. We'll see. Humanoid robots coming very soon. Will the Grizzlies be signing one? A humanoid robot to replace Zach Edey?
I don't know if it can replace Zach Edey, but I mean, you know, we can get the analytics department up and running pretty well.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So I read Harrington about this, and you know, he basically seemed to suggest that the Grizzlies probably aren't looking for just a short term thing here. They're looking for maybe a real, because there's no guarantee when he'll be ready, because there's going to be conditioning. Is there going to be a setback? Like you just don't know. And some of the options were like Luke Kornet. And I'm blanking on some other. The guy from Orlando, Batadze.
Yeah. Dayron Sharp and Jericho Sims.
Dayron Sharp has long been an infatuation, it feels like, in Memphis, and I don't understand why. But
it's bargain shopping.
Right.
That's what it is. Yeah.
I do think if you can get Luke Kornet out of Boston, that would be great because he is a defensive game changer.
He was in a playoff series.
I mean, that's better than anything else on this roster.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, look, I think when it comes to replacing Zach Edey, it's hard because Jeff had a topic on his show earlier this week talking about what should be the priority for the Grizzlies. And we've also talked about if they do this renegotiate and extend with Jaren, you know, their options are going to be more limited because they're going to be a cap space team. So when you're a cap space team, you can spend up to the salary cap. You're not spending up to the first apron. So the options to add players, limited. The options to trade, limited, because you're going to have to trade away some of your tradable contracts to make that happen. So you're going to have to shop on a bargain if you're the Grizzlies. And if you have $9 million roughly to spend in your exception, like how much of that do you want to set aside to add a wing? You know, watching that finals game last night and just the playoffs in general, there's an athleticism gap between what the Pacers have and what the Grizzlies had last year. And I think that one thing that should be prioritized is adding wings that can be disruptive because of their athleticism, can also get to the basket, score you a bucket. But just the Grizzlies just didn't have a lot of it. You saw a lot fewer easy baskets for the Grizzlies over the course of the season, and I think that was more an athleticism thing. Obviously, coming into the year, you maybe thought it was going to go one way. They thought they would be able to play that way. Marcus Smart, Vince Williams, like those two things did not work out over the course of the season. Vince was hurt. Marcus seemed like he wasn't in great shape when he even got to the Grizzlies to start the season, and it just never played out that way. So when it comes to replacing Edey, I think that might be something that you're trying to do on the cheap end, because I still hold wing depth and putting veteran wings on the court above that, even given the injury situation, even if it takes them until mid-December to get Edey back on the floor. I think you can navigate that easy. Like, you can navigate that over the course of a season, still make the postseason and feel good about Edey going into the playoffs. You can't feel good about the Grizzlies going into the playoffs if they don't find a way to add more veterans and put pieces that are meaningful on the team, and especially on the wing. So I would expect that this is going to be a bargain shopping sort of deal for Memphis as it comes to, you know, finding center depth.
That's in terms of percent chance they get this renegotiate and extend done with Jaren, where do you think it's at? Is it 50-50? Is it 60-40? In terms of chance, we do that now. Well, I say we, the Grizzlies, do that now with Jaren, or go into next year and we figure this out next summer.
I haven't heard anything yet to lead me to believe that that may not happen. But the more I've thought about it, I've wondered, because with Jaren, if he turns it down, there's an opportunity for an extra year.
Mm-hmm.
So there's benefits to, and he could make All-NBA and then get a Supermax and get another chance.
Bobby was telling us yesterday, like most folks would say, you don't turn down the guaranteed money now to take a swing, but I'm with you.
But there are potential positives.
He's got to feel like he's close.
Right.
Yeah.
There are potential positives. And the other thing is that we talk about these limitations that the Grizzlies are facing, and one way to solve that would be to get uncomfortable and let Jaren reach unrestricted free agency, and your options at that point are a little bit better than what they would be if you did the extension now. So,
I've wondered if the Edey stuff can factor into that, just because, well, you need flexibility, right? I mean, we talked about how you already weren't going to have any trying to do this deal with Jaren. I mean, you're nodding because you already know where I'm going. Now you really need some with Edey being hurt. I just wondered if that factors in at all to the Jaren, you know, question this
maybe
offseason.
But I think a lot of it just depends on where you think Edey's going to be at to start the year, right? Because if it's mid-November, that's not that big of a deal.
No,
right?
It's not.
If it's 15 to 20 games, not a huge deal.
Or you said if December, you were saying you still feel okay. If it's early December, you still feel all right.
I feel like it'd be a win if he's on the court in early December. I think he could be on the court before that, but I just feel like that would be a win for the Grizzlies because he's going to be off of his feet all summer. Like, that's just the way that this –
no doubt.
This works when you have a procedure like this. And it was serious enough to where they felt like they had to do the surgery, right? Ankle sprains don't always require surgery. And sometimes there's a question of whether or not a player is going to have surgery if they have an injury. Like, Steven Adams didn't have the surgery, then ended up needing the surgery right before the start of the season. That was a disaster. They say Brandon Clark's knee is not as severe as that one. He's not going to have the surgery. With Edey, I don't think there was any question. It was just like, you're going to go have the surgery. And he,
especially
he
factor in his size, right?
Yeah, and the history there.
Right.
So if you feel confident, I don't think you need to make any drastic changes to your long-term strategy if he's going to be out on the floor in mid-November or even early December.
I got you.
But I think maybe it does. It's. I'll be interested to see how they decide to play. And I said this earlier. It's like Tomas Isolo prides himself on being able to change things up and play different styles and look at what he's got in front of him and then find something to make it work. But I feel like that's not advantageous for building a team and forming an identity and having a style that you're confident in when you get to the end of the season. If you have to play an entirely different way for the first month and a half of the season, but they might need to play a different way if they want to win games. So it definitely puts them in a predicament. I don't know what it does exactly to what you do with Jaren. I think the ideal plan would be to get an extension done. It just makes too much sense from a financial standpoint. And you're just the chances that you're going to get a player back in any sort of trade or anything like that, that's of the same quality is extremely low. So it's that. And then it's Bane. Like if you were to trade and we talked about it last week and get off of that contract, maybe you could maybe he has enough value to bring back a few different quality players. And it opens up the door a little bit for you to have a little bit more maneuverability.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see what happens. This is a tough summer. I don't envy Zach Kleiman because he's going to have some very difficult decisions to make.
Yeah.
I mean, do we have any indication like how they feel about Bane? Like,
I think they like Desmond Bane. I think
they obviously liked him enough to give him the money.
Yeah. Well, he's a needed, in my opinion, personality on the team. There's like a, I don't know if maturity is the right word, but like a leadership mixed with the maturity that, you know, Ja's a little bit more jovial. Jaren's a little bit more jovial. Bane is a lot more serious.
Is he the one that's holding guys accountable?
I feel like his leadership would be missed if he was not on the team.
I hear you.
And I feel like everybody in that locker room likes him. There's like no question about that. And so it would be painful, I think, to have to part ways with a player like that. And he's not that far into his NBA career. There's a chance he makes another step and then he's an all-star player and you just traded away an all-star player and you're regretting it. But at some point, you have to find a way to match what teams like Indiana and OKC have done and put more quality players on the court. And it maybe it's a little bit of recency bias, and I think Chris checked me in the segment at 10 o'clock and said the Grizzlies were missing Brandon Clark and Jalen Wells. And if they had those players, you'd feel better about it. But I don't know. It just doesn't feel like the Grizzlies have as many above average players that they can throw out there over a course of a game to perform the way that we're seeing the Pacers and the Thunder do it in the finals. Like, I don't think the Grizzlies have anybody like Mathurin on their roster.
I mean,
or Toppin for that.
I think they hope it's Gigi, but I don't think that it is.
I mean, maybe it turns out to be Gigi. And I still believe in Gigi. I think he'll be a good player.
We've seen some instant offense moments from
him.
Yeah,
I mean, but
Gigi may be a little bit closer to Toppin than to Mathurin.
Yeah. But if it's not him, then no, they don't.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I mean there are players who I think can do what like Santi.
They're capable of scoring 27 points off the bench. They've got players that are capable of that. But they're different players that are asked to do different things.
I mean, maybe Santi's the one because he's a cone defensively and he can shoot, pass, and dribble. That's Benedict Mathurin.
But he's a stretch four.
He is.
And
it's not the same position.
6'5".
It's not the same position, but it's the same. Who can I go to my bench to give me consistent scoring? Right. I mean, who can get hot?
Yes,
Santi would be
I
the
think,
best.
I think Mathurin is a little bit more sure on the ball. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I just think it's a, like, we were talking about it yesterday. We were kind of joking about it. Like, this run it back, like, it's a tough sell. Like, to me, it's a tough sell. Because I just don't know how you, and again, you know, fans are fans. They support or they don't. But it just feels like when you're trying to, you know, garner and galvanize, it's like, all right, you know, hey, just hope for health. Like that just feels like a weak strategy.
I wonder if it's just going to be a tough sell no matter what.
Yeah.
Because
could be.
If you, I mean, unless they don't do a Jaren deal and then they sign some players that like excite the fan base, like it's either going to be working on the margins, bargain shopping, as I said three times already, and that's not going to excite people, or you're going to have to trade away players of real value that the fan base likes, and you're probably not going to return the same quality of individual player, but maybe you'll bring back a few different pieces. Is that gonna win over the fan base? I don't know. So I don't know what the Grizzlies are going to do to energize everybody going into next season. It feels like it's definitely a difficult task given where they are right now.
And then what's Ja's contract eligibility, his contract extension eligibility?
Yeah, so he is eligible in July for a two-year extension that would take him through 2030. Okay. It'd be over $60 million a year. There's been a lot of people that have questioned whether or not the Grizzlies would be willing to do that. Yep. And there are certainly reasons why they might be that might be those might questions might be fair to ask, I should say.
Bobby mentioned it with us. We talked about the health, you know, the durability.
Durability, all that. I tend to think that that is a more real possibility than most, that a Ja extension could come this summer. But I just feel like they're still committed to him. Mm-hmm. And at every, what am I supposed to believe other than what's said? And mm-hmm. everything that they've said, both, you know, early in the season and then at the end of the season in exit interviews, is that like they don't have any interest in trading Ja and they're still fully committed to him. Well, if that is the case, then why wouldn't you give him a deal like that?
So yeah, exactly.
I think that it
final
is.
Final is so emphatic.
Yeah, I think that.
On those reports.
I think that it's a more real possibility than a lot of the reporting and some of the national guys would suspect.
My thing right now is in terms of, and it gets, you're right. I mean, the Grizzlies are at this place now at the roster, and it feels like Edie, and he does, this stuff makes it more difficult. You want to figure out the Jaren situation. But it's like we've talked about, until Ja Morant is on the floor enough, none of this is going to matter. What, right? Because it won't matter if you have the right formula around him, if he's only playing 50-something games a year, if he, you know, if he's not even eligible to get, you know, get to the 65, whatever. You've got to get him out there. And so I'm saying all that to say this to you. I know we sort of roll our eyes at it and say every year he's got to change his game, so much so that it felt like last year we go into the season and he's talking about, hey, I'm not going to dunk anymore in terms of a way to address it, but almost in a defensive way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you guys are taking something away from me here. I know I got to change, but I don't want to. Almost, and maybe I'm going too far with that, but almost like, okay, you're not locked all the way in on this. Like, maybe you're not as grasping of the need for change in your game as we think, you know, you need to be at this point. What are we, year 7 about to be? And if he doesn't get the mid-range game, if he thinks he can dunk his way to an NBA title, and you don't, you know, mm-hmm. there isn't an adjustment to try to stay on the floor more, it is scary. Yeah. It is scary to think about committing that much money to him or that this thing's ever really going to take off.
I think he's pretty aware of it. I think that he spent a lot of time last offseason focusing on his body to try to make sure he was going to be able to stay healthy, and obviously it didn't work out that way. I don't know if he's pushing back because people say he needs to play more carefully. Personally, I don't agree with that. Like, I don't think we're going to get the best version of Ja unless he is trying the crazy stuff, right? Like, that's when we see him at his best, when his swagger is at its highest point, when, you know, it energizes the rest of the team. I think it's a really important part of the Grizzlies' ethos, right, is having that version of Ja. I think there are some changes that might be needed, and I don't think that he doesn't work on those things. I think he does. But I think that the focus is more so trying to get his body to a point where it's going to stay healthy and, you know, working on his game and evolving his game around that, but yeah. starting in with that, if that makes sense. Starting with getting in a physical space where he can absorb as much contact as he's going to absorb over the course of a full season. And, you know, if we're going to talk jaw extension and all that, like, he's another player that could wait and see if he can get a supermax, mm-hmm. and that is certainly a possibility. I think if Ja were to take an extension and sign it this summer, it's almost an acknowledgement that it's not likely he's going to play 65 games in a season. Maybe the goal over the course of a Grizzly season, and I don't know what they would do different than they did last year, would be like, we probably know you're not going to play 65 games because we might be maxing you out at around 65 games anyway because we need you healthy for the playoffs.
See that? All
and if that is the case, then he should just go ahead and sign the contract now. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think a supermax is in Josh's future. I just don't. Yeah. But
yes, 65 sounds great. He's only done that once, right? Yeah. Rookie year, 67.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, there's incentive.
I kind of feel like with Ja, like, it's kind of been the same off season every year. Like, I see, like, the tweets, like, oh, Ja's going to remind them next year. Like, I feel like Ja's been, like, on the verge of reminding people for 3 years in a row now, you know?
But he has come back and played really well.
No, he has, but I think people have largely just kind of moved on, like, in terms of expecting Ja to be available, that top 10, top 15 guy. Like, it just kind of feels like the NBA has moved on from that.
I don't know what there is to remind people of at this point anyway, because he's just going to have, like, the viral moments are going to come with him, and yeah. that's going
to
be...
Just need to stay out there.
Like, he's not... No one's going to forget Ja. Right. I don't think. Yeah. I think there was a stage where he went through the suspension and the injury and the time away from the court, and then he came back and he hit a buzzer beater in the first game. Like, I think that's more fan lingo and fan hype and less reflective of what it actually is. Mm-hmm. I don't think people are forgetting Ja.
No, I just think in terms of, like, you know, there was a time 3 years ago, I always go back to 3 years, but, you know, it felt like he was going to be, you know, MVP candidate, you know, the Grizz were going to be a top two seed, and it's like, now you're just trying to be, you know,
I mean, he was a fringe top five MVP guy 21-22.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, that's when it felt like so many things were possible. And now it's like, I don't want to say they're spinning their wheels, but it just feels like the momentum has completely left them as a franchise.
It's also just hard because, like, even in 21-22, when he was a top five-ish MVP guy, there was a gap between that mm-hmm, and the top mm-hmm, three, which mm-hmm. because those players are just different. Like, they had, I mean, I guess Shea is an example of the contrary, but he's so good defensively that it's like he has impact on that end of the floor too. That I think Ja's getting better defensively, but that's not been a staple of his game, right?
Right.
But like Jokic and Giannis have such an impact in part because of their size that Ja's just can't. He's 6'4". Right? Mm-hmm. He's not going to be able to play the same way they do.
Hey, now that the Knicks are striking out on trying to get all the sitting head coaches, that I'm figuring the New York media might need you to help translate the stuff that Taylor Jenkins says, right? Because you've heard it. You heard it for years, and you can help them understand because they're not going to understand a word of that stuff that he's speaking right off the top. You're going to need to translate. He might get the job.
DeMichael and I went back and forth yesterday on the internet. He said the Knicks are at the bar, went to the wrong bar. And I was like, it feels like the Knicks are sending late night texts that they're going to regret. Because they're like, Billy Donovan? Really? Like, Billy Donovan. That's Chicago. Who you want to? It's that is insane. And I guess I wouldn't have ever expected Taylor Jenkins to be the first option there. It just does not feel like it would be a great fit. Maybe that'll be totally wrong, but maybe it'll come to that and he will end up in New York. I don't need to get on the radio and crap on Taylor Jenkins, but yeah, he definitely has an interview style that I think would clash with the New York media.
Yeah, they're going to have some follow-ups for him.
That would be, well, if they got time for him.
You're right, you got to be there to sit through the first answer to get to the...
But no, I think eventually he is going to land another head coaching job. I just wouldn't have expected it to be the Knicks. But the way that I can see it happening is because Tibbs is so different. And if you're trying to go for something different, maybe hiring a guy like Taylor Jenkins would be of the mold that you're looking for. But he doesn't have a strong playoff history.
No. One
and
postseason,
the Knicks,
series one.
The Knicks should be looking for a coach that's going to get them over the hump. And it doesn't feel like those two things necessarily align. There are things to like about Taylor Jenkins. I know now, like, by the end of it, it had worn sour here in Memphis. But I've been told by multiple people, you know, both with the Grizzlies and not with the Grizzlies, that Taylor Jenkins was as detailed in preparation and all that as anyone they've ever seen in the league. So there are things that he does well. It wasn't working here in Memphis. They moved on. It was the right time to do so, I felt like. But I think eventually he'll land somewhere else and he'll, you know, he still has a chance to be successful. I just didn't see it being the Knicks. So.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Going from the, you know, we saw Lionel go from the Grizz to the Brooklyn Nets, and that did not go well. That was not a great market for Lionel. It didn't play as well there as it did here. But, you know, who knows? That has been an entire disaster in and of itself. All right, this finals. It's 2-1. Pacers up 2-1. Is it over? Thunder got to go home?
No, it's not over.
We've been brainwashed. We've been bamboozled into thinking this Thunder team was the all-time great team. They're down 2-1 to a fourth seed.
The Pacers stylistically have a style that allows them to be able to play with OKC. OKC is still the better team. I don't care if the Pacers win the series. I still think OKC is the better team.
Yes.
I am officially on the Pacers apology tour, so I've got to be very careful with
what crowded.
I say.
It's a crowded wagon. Man.
But I don't think that this is over. I asked Jeffrey this morning, I'll ask you guys, like, if the Thunder win the next game, do you think the Pacers have a shot to still win the series?
That'll be tough.
Yeah.
I feel like you got to put them down.
And I don't.
Got to get 3-1 control.
I think that's
win both at home.
That's and they've done that, haven't they? Haven't they gone up 3-1 in every one of these series?
That's correct.
Yeah, because they put out Cleveland in 5, they put out New York in 6, and then they were up 3. They were up 3-1.